Welcome to the second hour's readings of the Midland Reporter-Telegram and the Odessa American. You can hear this program on Recording Library of West Texas Radio and on demand at recordinglibrary.org.
ECISD Nurses Step Up COVID Call Center by Ruth Campbell. Nurses with Ector County ISD got the learning experience of a lifetime by volunteering with the triage call center, which answered questions from the public about whether they should be tested for coronavirus. The call center, which is closing today, was hosted by Texas Tech University Health Sciences Center, and Dr. Timothy Benton was the medical director for the triage call center. Associate Dean of the College of Nursing at the University of Texas Permian Basin, Minerva Gonzalez, said she helped bring the ECISD nurses together and coordinated the day-to-day processes of the center. A total of 20 nurses between ECISD and University of Texas Permian Basin helped out, Gonzalez said in a text message. 16 nurses from the school district volunteered, including registered nurses Ali Hernandez, Joanna Muniz, and Alan Pitt. Hernandez has been with the district for 12 years, Muniz for 9 years, and Pitt for 19 years. Hernandez is usually stationed at Reagan and Ross Elementary Schools, Muniz at Buddy West Elementary, and Pitt at Ector College Prep Success Academy. Although they still had responsibilities at their campuses, they wanted to help the community. There were some nerves initially. Gonzalez said they were incredibly quiet when they arrived for training. But she said they have grown. I was excited, Hernandez said. For me, it's been an amazing learning opportunity. I don't think any of us have experienced anything like this before. This is definitely something that I will remember and take with me. It's been really nice coming together as nurses and doing something to help our community in other ways. Pitt said the nurses were supposed to work a 40-hour week for ECISD, but after a few weeks, it was getting hard to find things to do that were productive. So when this came open, I volunteered to help do it. And after the first or second phone call that I took, it was like, yes, this gives us some sort of a purpose, Pitt said. We're helping these people that were calling. They would sound anxious. They would sound worried, and we would be able to give them answers. It just felt good. Hernandez noted that they also were able to educate people and calm them down. A lot of times people would call and they were worried, but once you talk to them and educate them and kind of guide them and tell them what they need to do, what to expect, that kind of thing, they seem more calm when they get off the phone, Hernandez said. Muniz said it was the nurse-to-patient interaction that offered support to people. It was actually talking to somebody, helping them, easing their nerves, and getting them the help that they needed, she said. Pitt added that 90% of their day was direct patient care with students. When you take that away, you don't feel like you were as useful as you were. This was really good, he said. Pitt said the nurses had a list of questions they asked callers and then made a decision on whether they qualified for testing under Centers for Disease Control and Prevention guidelines. The nurses noted that testing guidelines had loosened somewhat. The criteria changed, and we went along and we found more things out about this virus, Muniz said. All the nurses said this experience will help them when they return to their regular jobs. We've gotten a lot more hands-on experience. I feel like with people doing the screening process, so we kind of know. We were always educating ourselves on what to look for, or kinds and signs of symptoms, but things kept changing and changing, and we were able to really be kept up to date here. I feel like when we go back, it's going to be easier to find those clues and needs and things, Hernandez said. As nurses, she added, patient care is what they do. And like Alan said before, our everyday patient care was kind of limited as to how we were practicing it. And this helped give us that additional way to care for people and to help people. We were still contacting our families and still keeping in touch with our families and some of our students and educating them any way we could remotely. But just while doing that, we were able to help other people in our community as well, Hernandez said. The number to call for screening is 432-703-5481, but only through May 29th. This number was supplied by Texas Tech University, Gonzalez said. They've housed us. They made all of this possible for us. She added that the nurses who volunteered are phenomenal. This triage call center would not be possible without their help. No doubt it would just not have been possible, Gonzalez said. Nurses would work 4.5-hour shifts in the morning or afternoon, but many of them wound up staying all day, so they were there for 9 hours, and they still handled responsibilities at their ECISD campuses. There were days when the ECISD nurses would tell Gonzalez they needed a break. They carried me because I was here Monday through Friday, Gonzalez said. She said the call center was going to wind down because the call volume has dropped dramatically. It happens in the summertime. It starts to get hot. They've opened up Texas, so people are starting to get back out into society. It's not uncommon. We expected this, so we don't think that the call center will be open much longer. They've all volunteered and said we'll help as long as needed, so I have no doubt they'll stay with us for as long as we're open, and then they can go back to their lives, Gonzalez said. If needed, she said they could restart the call center because the coalition built among Texas Tech, UTPB, the city, the county, and the community. If we need to do it again, I would say that we could probably do it overnight. We know how to get the call center going. We know how to create the drive-through process. We've got a manual, in essence, for it. Our goal is actually to continue to meet as a group moving forward. I don't think that we'll ever stop meeting. We've got to remain engaged. I see us continuing to do that. Just the discussions I've had with our community leaders, I believe that's our goal. We're going to continue to meet, probably on a monthly basis. She added that the experience has been incredibly rewarding, and she has made friendships that will last forever. I know we say that, but as nurses, I've been a nurse for 22 years. This is what we do. This is what we love, so we just can't help it, Gonzalez said. UTPB rolling out new computer science courses. University of Texas Permian Basin is rolling out 3 new computer science tracks this fall: cybersecurity, software development, and game simulation. These are 3 of the fastest growing fields, Dean of Arts and Sciences Scott McKay said. In the future, McKay said, there is going to be a shortage of hundreds of thousands of cyber professionals worldwide. And of course, we're currently losing trillions of dollars to damage and loss because of cybercrime. So literally, there are going to be hundreds of thousands of positions open that we're not going to be able to fill, McKay said. On top of that, software development, writing the software, and the programming piece is also very closely related to cybersecurity. It's a very strong skill set for cybersecurity, so bringing these both out together is kind of complementary, he said. That's why we're bringing them both out together in the fall. A wide variety of companies will need cyber professionals, McKay said. We're just starting to roll it out now. We do offer a certificate in cybersecurity, primarily for professionals who come back and get honed on the new things in cybersecurity. We do offer a couple of game courses now. We just started to put it out there, but we get a lot of interest in these programs, no matter where we take them. And certainly, if you're into high job demand and 6-figure salaries, this isn't a bad way to go, he added. The game simulation program is another rapidly growing field. Most of us think of it as game development, but there's a whole niche of simulation. Simulation is everything we interact on with computers. So you probably deal with something with simulation 40 or 50 times a day, if not more. It's in education, healthcare. Of course, it's in entertainment, so that's another huge field when you add simulation, he said. Games are exciting, he said, but that's just a small part of what simulation does. That will also be launched in the fall. We have some cybersecurity faculty coming in, and then I want to give kudos to our very talented art department that is going to help us with that game and animation simulation, because you have to be talented not only in computer science, but you need to be fairly talented at the creative side as well, McKay said. He added that most of the courses will be offered on the UTPB campus. It's a very intense program because, again, it's one of those programs where you have to be good in two areas. You have to learn the programming, and you have to be creative at the same time to collaboratively write good stories. It's an exciting field, McKay said. He added that the university has a strong faculty with a high level of expertise in these fields. And again, we have the advantage of having a favorable student-to-faculty ratio where we can maximize the mentorship in student success, so we can offer that really good relationship while they're learning a very demanding but prosperous career. McKay added that these are fields that will always have a need for people. We're still talking about somewhere about 500,000 shortage in 2 or 3 years worldwide, McKay said. As we build this out, we'll also build into our master's program, and people will be able to come back. If you get your degree 15, 20 years ago, there was no cybersecurity, and so a lot of those folks come back for certificates and different kinds of mini programs to kind of get where they need to be, because so much of what they do now has moved from, say, networking to security and that kind of thing, he said. Right now, UTPB is offering the 3 undergraduate tracks, and they are starting to add courses to the master's program. Eventually, we'll have the full track in master's as well, McKay said. OC Board to reorganize. The Odessa College Board of Trustees will meet at 6:30 p.m. Tuesday to tackle a number of items, including board reorganization and reviewing the contract of President Gregory Williams. Williams became president of OC in 2006. The board will review his contract in executive session, according to the agenda. Other items on the agenda are: consider approving the Strong Start Scholarship, the President's Report from Williams on the OC Testing Center achieving national status, the Drive-In Employee Service Awards event, and campus safety in the time of COVID-19. Consider approving Ashley Warren as Executive Assistant to the President.
Hello, this is Cindy reading from the Midland Reporter Telegram for Saturday, May 23rd. Midland unemployment leaps to 10.2%. TWC, oil industry sector, led with the loss of 5,200 jobs by Mella McEwen. Midland's labor market felt the economic impact of the COVID-19 pandemic in April, according to figures released Friday by the Texas Workforce Commission. The commission reported April unemployment in its Midland Metropolitan Statistical Area, which includes Midland and Martin counties, jumped to 10.2% from 3.4% in March. This is exactly 6 times the April 2019 unemployment rate of 1.7%. The Tall City follows Amarillo, which had 8.8% unemployment, Abilene and College Station Bryan, which each had 8.9%, and Lubbock with 9.9% unemployment. Odessa saw its unemployment rate climb to 13.5% from 4.7% in March. It could be worse, said Willie Taylor, Chief Executive Officer of the Commission's Workforce Solutions Permian Basin. He said that his offices have a little more than 17,000 unemployment insurance claimants, the majority in Midland, Odessa. Such figures could last through the summer, he said. As things begin to open up, Taylor said in a phone interview, that his offices are preparing, working with local colleges and doing short-term planning to help those who have been put out of work. Gone is the area's strong job market where a person could leave a job, walk across the street, and immediately find a new one, he said. He also said the recovery process will be longer. Job seekers will have to be prepared for the search to take longer, he said. A lot of these are permanent layoffs, he said. Some people won't go back into the oil and gas industry, and they had better prepare for jobs that pay less than oil and gas jobs once did, Taylor said. While some receiving unemployment benefits said they're receiving more than their old paychecks, Taylor said benefits do expire, and he urged recipients to take the opportunity to get training and hone their skills, which is why he is working with local colleges on their workforce training programs. Even when we're back up to full speed, we're going to need skilled workers, medical, education, automotive, transportation, information technology, he said. You have to look at the positive side. This will be short term, and everything will be clicking again. It will take time. It will take time for people to get comfortable going out again. The Midland MSA saw its civilian labor force drop from 108,284 to 95,438 between March and April, a difference of 14,684. The number of employed Midlanders fell by 22,569. And the number of unemployed jumped by 7,885, rather. Midland lost 14,700 total non-farm jobs from March to April as the job count plummeted to 98,900 from 113,600 in March, according to the TWC. The mining, logging, and construction sector led with the loss of 5,200 jobs, followed by the leisure and hospitality sector, which lost 4,200 jobs. For the 12 months from April 2019 to April 2020, Midland lost 15,800 jobs, for a decline of 13.8%. The dominant mining, logging, and construction sector led with the loss of 7,500 jobs, followed by the leisure and hospitality sector, down 4,300 jobs. Trade, transportation, and utilities lost 2,100 jobs, and the manufacturing sector lost 700 jobs. The government and other services sectors each lost 600 jobs, and the education and health services sector lost 300 jobs. Professional and business services was the only one to add jobs. 300 jobs were added during the period. Statewide, Texas reported a seasonally adjusted unemployment rate of 12.8%, while losing 1.298 million non-farm jobs during the last month. While Amarillo reported the lowest unemployment statewide, the highest was in McAllen, Edinburgh, Mission with 18.2%. AAA, Midland's gas price increase less than Odessa's, by Stuart Doreen. The average price of gas in Midland crept up, but not nearly to the pace prices are rising across the state. AAA Texas reports that the average in Midland was $1.76, which is still the highest in the state, and is an increase of 3 cents week over week. However, the jumps elsewhere, including across West Texas and the Panhandle, show the price increase in Midland could have been worse. Just in the Permian Basin, there was a change. Last week, the difference in the average in Midland and Odessa was 17 cents. This week, it is 11 cents. As AAA Texas reported a 9-cent increase, 18 miles to the west of Midland. The average in Odessa is $1.65, the third highest in the state. Across the region, the following increases were reported: 11 cents in Abilene, 9 cents in San Angelo and Amarillo, and 4 cents in El Paso, which has the second highest average in the state, $1.85. Other averages were $1.50 in Lubbock, an increase of 2 cents this past week, $1.52 in Amarillo, $1.57 in San Angelo, and $1.60 in Abilene. Across the state, the average jumped 6 cents to $1.60. Going back 2 weeks, the average across the state was $1.50, while Midland's average hit $1.75. That is a drop in the difference from 25 cents to 16 cents in 2 weeks, according to AAA Texas. The lowest average in the state was found in Sherman-Denison, where drivers are paying $1.49 a gallon, up from $1.41 last week. Distributors have told the Reporter-Telegram there are many complexities in the fuel business that impact pricing. They pointed to the high cost of transportation from Gulf Coast refineries and Midland's distance from pipelines. The organization also reported this week that drivers are filling up with the cheapest gas for this holiday weekend in almost 2 decades. The statewide average on Memorial Day in 2003 was $1.39 for a gallon of regular unleaded. 1 year ago, drivers in Midland paid $2.76 a gallon in Midland, an increase of $1. The average in Texas 1 year ago was $2.57, which is 97 cents more year over year.
This is the opinion page. This column is entitled "Return to School Will Aid Kids' Well-Being" by Amy Anderson and Jonathan Butcher, Heritage Foundation. Amy Anderson is an assistant professor in the schools of nursing and medicine at Texas Christian University. Jonathan Butcher is a senior policy analyst in the Center for Education Policy at the Heritage Foundation. Will your school, neighborhood school, open on schedule in the fall? The answer should vary by location, but some headline-grabbing declarations are prolonging the uncertainty for families and students. And uncertainty leads to fear, an infectious state of mind best treated with a dose of common sense. Special interest groups encourage educators to, quote, scream bloody murder, unquote, if collective bargaining and significant new federal spending are not included in reopening plans. Neither of these conditions guarantee safe conditions for schools, and spreading panic is not a useful exercise. Meanwhile, Dr. Anthony Fauci's role is to encourage caution, so no one should fault the National Institute of Allergy and Infectious Disease Director for explaining the risks and rewards for different decisions. Yet this allows the media to take any conclusive statement and use it to prove their case. When Fauci says a vaccine is the ultimate solution and won't be ready by the fall, some are quick to say schools should remain closed. However, he also said situations regarding school will be very different in one region versus another. Local educators and health practitioners, then, must be the ones to decide when schools reopen and make decisions based not on national averages, but on the circumstances in their area. Parents and educators should take an additional step and make their school's default position one that is ready to open on schedule, unless evidence suggests there are compelling health reasons not to do so. Schools should monitor updates to health guidelines and revise their operations and policies accordingly. For example, instead of asking students that have a fever to stay home for 24 hours after the fever breaks, he or she should stay home for 3 days, consistent with Centers for Disease Control guidelines. Schools also should plan to update their guidance as we learn more about the virus. State lawmakers should not order school closures across the whole state unless data support a statewide concern. Superintendents and school boards should not close an entire district or individual school unless there is a significant outbreak in the immediate area affecting normal operations, or a large percentage of students with COVID-19 warrants such an action. If selective dismissal or closure is necessary, the district should provide the highest level of disinfection and sanitizing available prior to school resuming. District officials should continue to work with the local public health departments to determine safe and appropriate resumption of school activities in the event of a dismissal or closure. Likewise, families and educators should now plan for athletics, fine arts, and extracurricular activities to resume, and governing bodies should allow additional time in the summer to make up for lost instruction. If there is a significant outbreak, then school officials should consider limitations rather than widespread cancellation of events. For example, schools could limit athletic and fine arts events to student participants, school personnel, and their family members. Students have already lost so much during the spring lockdown. For the physical and social-emotional well-being of students, enriching activities such as these should not be lost to fear. Administrators should consult with doctors, school nurses, and health experts to determine appropriate modifications if a significant outbreak occurs. Should there be a surge in infections, parents have the right to protect their children. Lawmakers and school districts should carefully suspend truancy laws to accommodate a parent's choice to keep a student home because of health concerns. Students with special needs or underlying health conditions should be reasonably accommodated through virtual or online learning if the situation is warranted. Fauci told lawmakers that we, quote, "we should be humble about what we don't know," unquote, which is sound advice. No one knows what the mortality rate or number of infections will be in August, but we should base our plans for resuming life on the idea that we will resume school in the fall unless there are compelling reasons not to. A return to school is necessary for economic recovery, and education is also the key to upward mobility and better long-term health. Common sense must prevail. This column is distributed by Tribune Content Agency. This column is called Guest View. It is entitled American Leadership as Indispensable Today as During World War II, from the Dallas Morning News. President Donald Trump marked the 75th anniversary of Nazi Germany's surrender to Allied forces in Europe on May 8th with a small wreath-laying ceremony attended by the First Lady and 8 World War II veterans. Sadly, the coronavirus pandemic necessitated a scaled-down ceremony for a monumental achievement, victory over Hitler's genocidal vision of a Third Reich across Europe, and the unconditional surrender of Germany's high command. That victory would not have been possible without the ingenuity, resolve, and great sacrifices of everyday Americans and the more than 400,000 U.S. soldiers, sailors, Marines, and aviators who laid down their lives to defeat the evils of fascism. The small wreath-laying ceremony at the National World War II Memorial in Washington, D.C. was appropriately somber. As taps played, the president and the 8 veterans saluted the more than 4,000 gold stars that cover the Freedom Wall, each representing 100 Americans who perished in the war. The scaled-down ceremony had its own grace and profundity, but it also carried a symbolic significance and issued a call to action from the greatest generation to the generations of today. Before the Freedom Wall and its field of gold stars are engraved these words, "Here we mark the price of freedom." At a time when authoritarianism is on the rise and illiberal democracies across the globe are challenging the economic and civil liberties that form the foundation of democratic societies and economic growth after World War II. Those words, "the price of freedom," should echo in our hearts and minds. Now is not the time for small ideas or retreat from America's 75-year role as the leader of what we once proudly called the free world. The coronavirus pandemic, while a great challenge to an open society, heightens the need for U.S. leadership and cooperation with our allies to vouchsafe the democratic values of economic and individual liberty we fought so bravely for in World War II. If the 21st century is to be another American century, if we are not to cede leadership on human rights, international trade, and increasingly the role of global supply chains and cooperation in battling pandemics, we must lead. If we are not to cede U.S. power to China and other competing powers in forms like the World Trade Organization and the World Health Organization, we must not retreat from those bodies. We must lead them. If we are to expect other nations to respect the rights of refugees and displaced peoples, we must respect those rights ourselves. It is no exaggeration to say that our nation and the world is now in the grips of a crisis that could turn the clock back on many of the things this nation and our fighting men and women died for in World War II. This column is distributed by Tribune Content Agency. This column is entitled, "It's Okay to Be Afraid of Coronavirus," by Ruben Navarrete, Washington Post Writers Group. Lately, I've been thinking a lot about fear. I'm not alone. For Americans, 2020 is the unofficial year of fear. We are not just afraid of contracting the coronavirus and passing it on to family members. We're also afraid of efforts by state and local governments to fight the virus, mistaking attempts to keep us healthy for a power grab intended to keep us under control. Some of us are afraid of those scary public rebellions by people who, while they've never lived without freedom, are suddenly convinced we're two steps away from tyranny. Folks fear closing down businesses, draining life savings, or not being able to find jobs to replace the ones they lost. They shudder at the thought of one more Zoom call or homeschool lesson, any more time being quarantined with spouses and children, and whatever prolonged isolation does to one's mental health. On a recent conference call with reporters, a representative of the United Food and Commercial Workers International Union disclosed a new fear. Grocery workers are afraid that requesting that customers wear masks, which are, after all, intended to protect not ourselves but others, threatens their personal safety. Following a rash of violent incidents, grocery workers want hazard pay and security guards on site because the union official said they're, quote, downright afraid, unquote, to ask people to wear a mask. Many of us became acquainted with fear through parenthood. Just watching the news makes you want to package your kid in bubble wrap. As a father of two teenagers and a 10-year-old going on 16, I'm counting on fear to keep them safe. It's a family tradition. Ray's the son of a cop. It was fear of my old man that kept me away from alcohol and drugs. In the 1950s, fear kept my dad and his four brothers out of trouble because they were terrified of my grandfather, who did not believe in sparing the rod. Now that I'm married, it's fear of my wife that helps make me a good and faithful husband. If more men and women had more fear, we'd have a better society full of longer marriages and stronger families. As America takes baby steps toward reopening non-essential businesses, driven not by science, but by the fact that we're tired of making sacrifices, there is a tug of war going on, and fear is tugging at both ends. At one end, fear is pulling us toward the idea of reopening the economy as completely and as quickly as possible, because we're afraid of losing jobs, businesses, and livelihoods. At the other end, fear is driving the argument that we should go slow and delay much of the planned reopening until more counties and states demonstrate that infection rates are actually going down. Which version of fear will win out is still unclear, although the reopen side of this tug-and-war is clearly gaining traction. I'm on the end that is losing ground. I'm still afraid of getting COVID-19 since I fall into some of the at-risk categories. And experiencing the sensation of drowning while an elephant tap dances on my chest qualifies as my least favorite way to die. I'm also afraid of passing on the virus to my wife and children because we still don't know how it is spread, how long it remains on surfaces, how any of us will react if infected, and much of anything about it. How did I get so afraid? Well, for starters, I was spooked by the biggest boogeyman in the country. He is singing a different tune now to stay on the right side of the mob. But it was President Trump, our demagogue in chief, who first scared me. In early April, Trump called COVID-19 a monster and said this was a war. He even talked about a friend from New York who got infected and landed in a coma. That friend, Stanley Chera, died a few weeks later. It's great that so many Americans are done with COVID-19. But has anyone asked COVID-19 if it is done with us? Or if it's planning on making a comeback if we get back to normal too quickly? Or come to blows when someone asks us to wear a mask? So yes, these days, fear is my constant companion. I'm good with that. In recent weeks, I've come to see the value of being just a little bit afraid of the unknowns that life has in store for us.
Hello, this is Cindy reading Viewpoints from the Midland Reporter-Telegram for Sunday, May 24th. Community will benefit from constructive conversation by Stuart Doreen. Keep up the intensity. That was my first thought after watching a released Midland Police Department video of the arrest of a 21-year-old Midland man. Keep up the intensity. I write this not because I think that a great injustice took place on the part of Midland Police Department officers. In fact, I credit the officers with keeping the peace as onlookers created more tension. Officers controlled the scene, remained calm, and performed their job as I would expect. So why keep up the intensity? Because Midlanders still need to finish what we started. Last week, city leaders called for a conversation and an opportunity for people to listen to each other. The footage I saw didn't change the need for such a community meeting, and the district attorney's comments that she did not see any actions by the police department that would cause me any concern with moving forward with the case doesn't change the need for a constructive meeting. District 2 residents, city leaders, and Midland Police Department officials likely still have something to say, and everyone in attendance at the town hall should be ready to listen to one another. The city reported Friday that the first community conversation will take place 6 to 8 p.m. Thursday at the Martin Luther King Jr. Community Center. I'm disappointed with the choice of location because I thought that with a crowd that could show up, the venue might be too small, especially during the days of social distancing guidelines. But it is a first meeting. Still, keep up the intensity. If you have concerns, comments, suggestions, or even want to throw out compliments, don't let the release of the video or site selection stop you. All Midland residents are welcome to attend, and those entering the door should come ready to listen. Before signing off, it would be hard not to include a salute to Councilman John Norman, his District 2 Advisory Committee, and anyone else who helped make the decision to release the videos last week. I didn't think the footage would be released so early in the process, but the process is better because city officials have released the video. Their decision brought this matter into a different light, at least it did for me. I wrote it before, but will offer it again. District 2 residents are benefiting because of their representative. Councilman Norman called for transparency from the beginning and worked hard to deliver it for his constituents and for all Midland residents. Still, no matter what side of the debate you're on, keep up the intensity. There is still an opportunity for all Midlanders who want to contribute to the conversation about a better Midland. Trustees should consider new calendar if it improves education. John Trischetti III, MISD board member. Even before I ran for school board, I was a longtime proponent of intersessional school. Why? The academic summer slide is very real. In my earliest days in public library work as a children's librarian, I witnessed that the decline in skills, especially in reading, over a long summer was measurable and often significant. While it can affect all students, its effect on low-income students can be so much more impactful. The Texas Education Agency reports that the impact of summer slide may create a gap of up to 3 grade levels for low-income students by the 5th grade. Additionally, data from the Department of Education and the International Literacy Council shows that of the students that fall behind and are below grade level in reading going into 3rd grade, 3 out of 4 will not catch up before graduation if they graduate. This is just one example of academic decline that happens over the summer. Also of note, while schools are not daycare centers, they do provide for needs beyond learning, food programs, health and wellness, etc. School can be a refuge for many students, as it was for me growing up. As a school board member, the possibility of Midland ISD adopting an intersessional school calendar triggered more emails, calls, and texts than any topic in my time on the school board. Even though the agenda item was discussion and information only, the community moved the needle with contacts to the school board, making it obvious that the topic is of great interest. I would like to take this opportunity to share what information the board has received and the reason why this is being considered. The newly published calendar options provided by the state allow local districts to determine the calendar that best meets the academic needs of students. An intersessional calendar provides options for students and the potential for students below grade level to have additional learning opportunities. Many districts, including Socorro ISD, have been using a similar intersessional calendar, and others are considering the concepts as a viable option based on student need. Intersessional does not mean year-round. Year-round school implies that students are in school every month of the year and there is no summer. That is not what intersessional is. If Midland ISD moves to an intersessional calendar, students will spend the same number of days in the classroom. Teachers' contracts would be the same length, and school holidays would be preserved, including Thanksgiving, Christmas, spring break, and summer. The length of those might vary, a 2-week spring break, a shorter summer break, but those all would still be a part of the school year. Intersessions can allow for a 10-day closure for public health concerns, but more importantly, these days also allow schools to provide remediation, reteach, and give small group instruction to target off-track students during the first week of each intersession. Additional instructional time offers the opportunity to improve academic outcomes. MISD can access additional state funding enabled by Texas House Bill 3, which provides half-day funding for school systems that add instructional days beyond the minimum 180 days and up to 210 days to any of their elementary schools, PK through 5. This additional funding could be used for teacher salaries, student transportation, food, and other school operations. Supplemental pay would be given to teachers that teach during the first week of the intersessions, allowing them the opportunity to increase their earnings. Additional time can improve teacher and student days, giving teachers more time for planning, and students have time for brain breaks, play, and enrichment. There is no quick fix, no silver bullet for public education, not in Midland, not anywhere. However, every and any action and decision that we can take to ensure the best possible offerings for our students is what we should be doing. If the intersessional calendar can help to improve education and benefit students, then it is something I personally, as a father and school board trustee, am willing to consider. John Truschetti III is the Executive Director of the Midland Development Corporation and is the District 5 Midland ISD School Board Trustee. Parents strive to heal their youngest son's broken heart. Dear Abby for Saturday. Dear Abby, my son, a high school senior, was in a relationship with a young woman who broke up with him and began dating his best friend. He was heartbroken. She played him into being friends and tells him he's her best friend, but her actions prove otherwise. His father and I comforted him as best we could, but he still has feelings for her. It was a tough breakup for him, and he says he can't understand why he feels this way for her. We as parents are having a hard time keeping our opinions to ourselves. We are not happy with him still being around her and try to discourage it as much as possible. We all attend the same church from which I've offered to remove myself, but my son says no. We limit the time he gets to be around her, but she has begun flaunting other dates in front of him, which is making it hard for us to be cordial toward her. How can I help my boy heal his heart and move on? He's my youngest, the last one ready to venture out to college, and I want him to have a fresh start for the new journey. Heavy-hearted Mom. Dear Mom, some lessons in life people must learn for themselves, and this is one of them. As much as you wish to help your son heal his heart, he's going to have to arrive at the realization that there's more pain than pleasure associated with the girl who rejected him. That is when he will move on, not before. College will provide him an opportunity to meet new people and cultivate new interests. Being in a new environment will also help. In the meantime, be patient. Refrain from saying anything nasty, as tempting as it might be, about his former girlfriend, and keep your son as busy as you can. Dear Abby, I have been married to the same woman for 34 years. We have raised two great kids. The problem is, my wife does not show, respond to, or initiate any affection or intimacy. I understand she has been through menopause, but is this the new normal? For me, it is a lonely, cold existence. Most nights, she won't even share the same bed with me. She also does not respond well to talking about things. Must I live the rest of my life this way? Roommate in Virginia. Dear roommate, your problem is less about the lack of affection and intimacy in your marriage and far more about the lack of communication your wife allows you to have with her. If a problem can't be discussed, there is no way to arrive at a solution or a compromise. If you haven't told her how lonely and isolated you feel, start there. What's happening is not fair to you. This is something that should be discussed with her doctor, because there may be a medical solution if sex is painful for her. However, if it is more complicated than that, recognize that you need more help than I can give you in a letter or a newspaper column, and ask your doctor or insurance company to refer you to a licensed marriage and family therapist for the answers you are seeking. If your wife refuses to go with you, go without her. To my Muslim readers, it is time for the breaking of the Ramadan fast. Happy Eid al-Fitr, everyone. Abby. Abby shares more than 100 of her favorite recipes in two booklets, Abby's Favorite Recipes and More Favorite Recipes by Dear Abby. Send your name and mailing address, plus check or money order for $16, U.S. funds, to Dear Abby, Cookbooklet Set, P. P.O. Box 447, Mount Morris, Illinois, 61054-0447. Shipping and handling are included in the price.
Hello, this is Kay, reading the Odessa American for Sunday, May 24th, 2020, etc. Stepmother-to-be is happy leaving parenting to parents. Dear Abby, I'm engaged to a younger man with a 10-year-old son from his first marriage. My two daughters are grown. My fiancé and I have talked at length about my role in his son's life after we're married. The boy's mother will have him full-time. My fiancé will continue to do his part as far as picking his son up from school, taking him to baseball practices and his baseball games, taking him to movies, etc. I have been told he and his ex will continue to co-parent, and I will not have to be responsible in any way for this child. I have no problem with this. In my opinion, the boy's parents have the right to raise him as they please. Plus, as an older woman, I'm relieved I won't have to be responsible again for a child at my age. To me, this is a win-win, but my daughters think it is odd. Who is right? Hands off in California. Dear Hands Off, you are. That boy is lucky to have responsible parents who are able to cooperate with each other in raising him. Your daughters are entitled to their opinions, of course, but you are also entitled to yours. Ignore them. Dear Abby, I went to the grocery store today. I was wearing a mask and careful to keep my social distance. The store employees were also wearing masks and keeping their distance. An older woman stood in front of the chicken for at least 10 minutes. When she finally moved aside, I went over to put some in my cart. She came back and gave me a lecture on which chicken was the best deal. I was horrified. I know she was trying to be friendly, but at this time of social distancing, the best way to be friendly is to give people their space in public. This scenario seems to happen every time I go to the store. What's the best thing to say to these people? Trying to keep safe. They're trying. The woman may have forgotten for a moment what the new rules are. The best thing to say in that situation would be, "Thank you, but please, for your health and mine, step back and keep your distance." Dear Abby, I read the definition of maturity in your column a while ago, and I would like to share a clipping I have been saving since the 1960s. It's from the Archdiocesan Council of Catholic Women newsletter, entitled "A Short Course in Courtesy." The six most important words: "I admit I made a mistake." The five most important words: "You did a good job." The four most important words: "What is your opinion?" The three most important words: "If you please." The two most important words: "Thank you." The one most important word: "We." The least most important word: "I." The clipping is disintegrating on my fridge, but the saying has provided a life lesson I've lived by. In these times of uncertainty, it's a good reminder of how to treat others. NY Transplant in Transplant in SC. Dear NY Transplant, I agree with the philosophy expressed in the item you shared. It is something to inspire us. Thank you for writing. Dear Abby, Abigail Van Buren, write Dear Abby at P.O. Box 69440, Los Angeles, California, 90069, or visit www.dearabby.com.
Dear Abby for Friday, May 29th. Teen worries about staying close to beau. Dear Abby, I have been in a relationship with my boyfriend for a little over 5 months. We have enjoyed spending time with each other, but we never have deep, meaningful conversations, and I feel that it's negatively impacting our relationship. Because of the coronavirus quarantine, we can't see each other because we are still in our teens and don't live together. If we don't start having conversations that mean something to either of us over the phone, I'm afraid we'll break up before we are allowed to see each other again. Please give me some advice. Stuck in quarantine. Dear Stuck, you may be worrying needlessly. Stop for a moment and ask yourself what kind of conversations you had with your boyfriend before the pandemic. How deep were they? Express how you have been feeling lately, but if you can, try to keep your conversations upbeat. Share stories and videos with him that make you laugh. If he wants to discuss his concerns, be prepared to listen, but don't push him in that direction. Space your calls so there will be something fresh to talk about, and always end your chats by telling him how much you care about him, which will probably make him smile. Dear Abby, I have several adult nieces and nephews whose dysfunctional upbringing makes them react in a very hostile and aggressive manner to anyone they perceive as disagreeing with them. They verbally abuse anyone they view as opposing them. They have so alienated their parents' new spouse that they are no longer welcome in that parent's home at any time for any reason. I would like to remain on semi-friendly terms with them, but I am unwilling to accept their verbal abuse. Is there any way that this can be fixed? Distancing in Oklahoma. Dear Distancing, unless your nieces and nephews are willing to accept that they have anger management issues that need addressing, this isn't a problem that anyone other than a licensed professional can fix. If one of them unleashes a tirade on you, calmly point out that you prefer not to be abused and end the conversation by absenting yourself. Do it once, and I guarantee the word will spread. Dear Abby, I'm at my wit's end. I love my husband, but when we have company, he dominates the conversation, usually repeating the same stories over and over. If friends and family tell him they've heard the story before, he just ignores the remark and continues. He is retired, and I realize he doesn't socialize enough. His health has not been the best. By the end of the evening, I am worn out. What can I do? Pain in hosting. Dear Pain, that your husband is retired and isolated may contribute to his problem. As soon as it's feasible, encourage him to get out of the house and involve himself in some new activities where he can put his talents and experience to good use. However, if his repetitiveness is new behavior, this should be discussed with his doctor so he can be evaluated, because it could indicate the onset of a medical or neurological problem.
Jacqueline Bigger Stars by Madeline Aslan. Note, Bigger Stars is based on the degree of your sun at birth. The sign name is simply a label astrologers put on a set of degrees for convenience. For best results, readers should refer to the dates following each sign. A baby born today has a sun in Gemini and a moon in Leo until 7:40 a.m. when the moon enters Virgo. Happy birthday for Friday, May 29, 2020. Quick in thought and expressive, you stay committed to your cause and you succeed admirably. Remember that you don't have to be perfect. Finances are excellent halfway through the year. If single, you move from one relationship to another before finding your mate. If attached, worry less and enjoy the love between you more. When you feel your partner is unavailable, you consider leaving. Taurus sticks through thick and thin. The stars show the kind of day you'll have. 5 dynamic, 4 positive, 3 average, 2 so-so, 1 difficult. Aries, March 21 through April 19, 5 stars. Your health and well-being take a turn for the better. With your renewed vitality, career prospects brighten until you actually become something of a star at work. It is a perfect day to look for a new pet, especially a cat. Tonight, steer clear of competition. Taurus, April 20 through May 20, 4 stars. There is time today to share a comfortable joke or enjoy favorite games and hobbies with a friend. An evocation might develop into a job. Postpone decisions about love, as you are likely to go through a change of heart later. Tonight, your attitude shifts. Gemini, May 21 through June 20, 3 stars. You will be generous with loved ones and lavish with purchases for the home. A sense of humor makes all the difference if a social situation is delicate. Check weather conditions. In-laws might voice surprising new ideas. Tonight, early Betty buys. Cancer, June 21 through July 22, 5 stars. There might be a need to try a different route for daily travel. Reread emails before sending. You will no longer be hampered by dead weight and old issues. Tonight, a fresh, invigorating quality blows into your life like a fresh summer breeze. Leo, July 23 through August 22, 3 stars. Old financial obligations and patterns need attention. It is not the time to consider a risky investment. Be conservative with purchases. Postpone selling or giving away possessions you have treasured. You'll regret it later. Tonight, listen to someone you see every day for a suggestion. Virgo, August 23 through September 22. 5 stars. Unusually for you, today favors an attitude of largesse. Elevate your standards and expectations. This is the start of a time of great growth. Love and appreciation surround you. Clothing selected now will be beautiful and serviceable. Tonight, healing online retail therapy. Libra, September 23 through October 22. 4 stars. There is an accent on psychology and mental health today. Dreams and psychic hunches are plentiful. You develop inner mental and emotional strength through being sensitive to your deepest drives. Tonight, service to one who really needs it will be very satisfying. Scorpio, October 23 through November 21. 5 stars. Your social life is bright and active today. You will be eager to get to know an acquaintance better. Accept and issue invitations. Make or buy gifts that suggest humor and a personal message. Tonight, a friendship propels you towards spiritual awareness or artistic expression. Sagittarius, November 22 through December 21. 3 stars. Today's success depends upon being realistic about what you can do. Preparation and the wise management of time are a must. Put business first and double-check details to assure career stability. Tonight, some extra sleep is the best gift you can give yourself. Capricorn, December 22 through January 19. 4 stars. Love assumes an abstract quality. You would appreciate an exciting and imaginative companion with whom to share adventures. A virtual visit to museum, library, or spiritual center will illuminate and uplift you. Tonight, imported foods and ethnic clothing are enjoyable. Aquarius, January 20 through February 18. 4 stars. You will be intensely curious about others today. Psychology and social sciences captivate you. You meet a parade of unusual, intriguing people online. Share a bit of humor and be understanding with your nearest and dearest. Tonight, expect a possessive, intense note to love. Pisces, February 19 through March 20. 5 stars. Personal involvements are electric, exciting, and unpredictable today. You can meet people who revolutionize your whole life. Allow others the freedom and recognize when a relationship must move and grow. Communication is smooth. Tonight, gather information and be a good listener. Born today, director Joseph von Sternberg, 1894, entertainer Bob Hope, 1903, actress Annette Bening, 1958.
Thank you for joining us for the readings of the Midland Reporter-Telegram and the Odessa American. This is the Recording Library of West Texas, enriching the lives of individuals with physical, visual, and learning disabilities since 1963. You can hear this program on Recording Library of West Texas Radio and on demand with your computer or your favorite mobile device at recordinglibrary.org.